as dumb as they look. Please don't raise your hand. Well, today we're going to talk about a very special group of those people. Most of the people we will be talking about today are either autistic, blind, or severely mentally impaired, and a few are even all three. They look impaired, they act impaired, but they are very special. What makes these people called savants so special? Well, besides being humans, made in the image of God with eternal souls, these people possess abilities that you will have a hard time comprehending. There are 20 of these people that I would like to talk about in the next half hour, and so I'll have to talk pretty fast. I've divided the talk into six general categories that these people fit into. So first we'll start with what are known as mathematical savants. Thomas Fuller was born in Africa in 1710, and at age 14 was taken to Virginia as a slave. He never learned to read or write, and from what we know, he was mentally handicapped to at least some degree. From a young age, however, he became fascinated with numbers. In 1788, two men from Pennsylvania heard about Fuller and decided to test him with three questions. The first one was, how many seconds are in a year and a half? He sat down quietly for about 2 minutes, then answered with 47,304,000. The answer was correct. The second question was, how many seconds has a man lived who is 70 years old, 17 days, and 12 hours old? In less than 2 minutes, he answered with 2,210,500,800 seconds. One of the men was working out the problem on paper and informed Fuller that he was wrong and that the sum was smaller. Fuller replied, "Massa, you forgot to add the leap year." The man changed his calculations and the sum matched. The last question was, suppose a farmer has six sows, and each sow has six female pigs the first year, and they all increased in the same proportion to the end of 8 years. How many sows will the farmer have? After thinking about it for about 10 minutes, Fuller gave the correct answer of 34,588,806. Jedediah Buxton was born in 1707, and he too could neither read nor write. He did, however, possess amazing skills when it came to numbers, though he could never say how he gained the skills. He paid little attention to things that interest most people, and even when a person asked him how he liked a certain performance or play, he would respond that one person came out and said so many words, and then another person came out and said so many words, and so on. Once he was asked, how many eighths of an inch are in an area that measure 23,145,789 yards by 5,642,732 yards by 54,965 yards? He thought about it for about 5 hours and then gave the correct 27-digit answer, which he could easily have given either forwards or backwards. He was also asked the cost of shoeing a horse with 142 nails if the price was one farthing for the first nail and the price doubled every nail after that. The answer is 2 to the 139th. And Buxton answered in pounds, a 39-digit answer, shillings and pence. His answer was later proven by calculators to be only a few digits off. His memory was so great that in resolving a question, he could leave off and resume operation again at the same point after the lapse of several months. He proved this when he tried to square the horseshoe nail answer, 2 to the 139th power squared. He completed the mental calculation in 2.5 months. The answer was 78 digits long, and he was later proven to be wrong in only one digit. Are there mental calculators like this today? As a matter of fact, there is. Rüdiger Gamm was born in 1971 in Welzheim, Germany. Rüdiger says that he learned how to speak backwards before learning how to speak forwards, which prompted classmates to tease or avoid him. Rüdiger was a self-proclaimed unachiever at school and said, "I was the worst in my class at math. I failed my exam 6 times. I hated school a lot." He recalls that one day, shortly after leaving college, he was listening to the radio and heard a champion mathematician being given mental calculations to do. As Rüdiger listened to the man, he began to realize that he could do the calculations too, though not in the way that he had been taught in school. After listening for a while, he found that he was able to calculate faster than the man on the radio show. He began to test and train himself, and a year later, he started appearing on national shows in which he competed with other mathematicians. In terms of mental calculations, Rüdiger's most notable talent is the ability to compute large powers. In the 2008 Mental Calculation World Cup, he computed 81 to the 100th power, which took him approximately 2 minutes and 30 seconds. He can also divide small numbers by larger ones, and as fast as his tongue can move, his brain helps him to calculate the answer up to 200 places past the decimal point. Another class of savants are the calendar calculators. Of the 17 people that we are covering today, at least 5 are able to do calendar calculations, including Rüdiger Gamm. But the next few individuals have only a couple of other outstanding gifts besides calendar calculating, so we will allow them to cover this class of people. George and Charles Finn were born in 1939. Both of them are mentally handicapped with IQs of around 60. They seem to have a mental calculator that extends for over 40,000 years in the past and in the future. Ask them what day of the week May 3rd was in the year 1, and they will tell you it was on a Wednesday. In 1983, George was asked, what day of the week will it be on June the 6th of the year 91,360? George repeated the question to himself, thought about it for a few seconds, and responded, it'll be on a Friday. The twins also have a remarkable memory, at least for some things. They remember everything that has happened to them since they were young, including what they ate, wore, and so on. These facts can hardly be validated, but the weather, on the other hand, can be. For example, George recalls, on April 15, 1956, Dr. Williams came to visit me and asked me a few questions about dates. It was rainy and windy in the morning, but the sun came out in the middle of the afternoon. Check the weather for that day, and George is right on. When George is asked how he can remember and calculate like he does, he just responds in his limited way, I don't know, it's just fantastic that I can do that. It's interesting to note that despite their incredible ability to do calendar calculating, George and Charles can't even do the simplest of mathematical computations. When asked what 5 times 7 was, George thought for a minute and guessed that it might be 50. Speaking of twin savants, there is another set that has similar abilities to that of Charles and George, in this case, twin girls. These are the only twin savants on record at this point. Flo and Kay, like George and Charles, can do calendar calculations and also have near-perfect memory of the events of their lives since childhood. They're also autistic and are mentally handicapped in many ways. I'd like to add here that in their childhood, Flo and Kay were treated with a lot of disrespect because of their limitations. No one even tried to see their potential, and the abilities that they had were somehow completely overlooked. Once, their mom tried to kill herself and the girls by turning on their gas stove. No one imagined that these two girls would be able to remember every detail of such events, along with word-for-word conversations 40 years later, conversations of frustration and disrespect. Now let's look at some musical savants. Thomas Wiggins, also known as Blind Tom, was born in 1849 and was an African-American slave. Because Tom was blind, he could not perform work normally demanded of slaves, so his owners originally wanted to kill him since he had no economic value to them. Instead, he was left to play and explore the Bethune plantation. At an early age, he showed an interest in the piano after hearing the instrument played by his owner's daughters. By age 4, he reportedly had acquired some piano skills by ear and gained access to the piano. At this age, he was able to repeat conversations up to 10 minutes in length and was barely able to adequately communicate his own needs, resorting to grunts and gestures. His skills became recognized by his owner, General Bethune, and Tom was permitted to live in a room attached to the family house, equipped with a piano. A neighbor of Tom's once commented, "Tom seemed to have two motives in life, the gratification of his appetite and his passion for music. I don't think that I exaggerate when I state that he made the piano go for 12 hours out of 24. Bethune hired out blind Tom from the age of 8 to a man by the name of Perry Oliver, who toured him extensively in the United States, performing as often as 4 times a day and earning Oliver and Bethune up to $100,000 a year, an enormous sum for that time, equivalent to over $1.5 million a year today. General Bethune's family eventually made a fortune estimated at $750,000 at the hands of blind Tom. Oliver marketed Tom as a Barnum-style freak, advertising the transformation from animal to artist. In the media, Tom was frequently compared to a bear, baboon, or mastiff. Do you have a problem with that? I do. One of Tom's most remarkable feats was the performance of 3 pieces of music at once. He played Fisher's pipe horn with one hand, Yankee Doodle with the other, and sang Dixie all at once. He could also play a piece with his back to the piano and hands inverted. At concerts, skeptics challenged Tom by playing a new, uncirculated composition and then having him play it for them. He did so perfectly, and it became a normal part of his performances. Derek Parravicini is the modern version of Blind Tom, possessing almost identical abilities. He was born in 1979 in Britain at 25 weeks. He became blind shortly after birth, which was caused by oxygen therapy in the neonatal intensive care unit. This mistake in the oxygen therapy also affected his developing brain, resulting in severe learning disability. Derek has trouble with the simplest of everyday tasks, from dressing to feeding himself. He is also autistic. His list of abilities include absolute pitch, and he can play a piece of music flawlessly for the rest of his life after hearing it only once. His ability allows him to do what no other musician would dare to do, asking for selections at a concert being given before thousands of people. He has a huge repertoire and flawlessly plays pieces on the spot that he has obviously heard but never actually played before. On top of that, he can play these selections in whatever way the crowd pleases. For example, he may be told to play a piece written by Bach in E flat minor in the style of Mozart. He has also been given a random title or a cluster of notes, a key, and a composer by the audience and asked to compose a piece on the spot using the paradigm given. As he begins to play, the audience calls out other composers and he immediately changes the style of his new composition to match the style of the person that they are calling out. Leslie Lemke is a similar jewel that was born in 1952 in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He was born prematurely, and at birth he was diagnosed with glaucoma, cerebral palsy, and brain damage. Doctors were forced to remove his eyes because of the glaucoma. He was so ill that he almost died. His birth mother gave him up for adoption, and May Lemke, a nurse, adopted him when he was 6 months old. To feed him, May had to force food down his throat. He was 1.5 years old before he could chew his own food. It took 7 years of constant care before Leslie showed any progress beyond the infant stage. During this time, he made no sounds or movements and showed no emotions. He was 12 before he first learned to stand and 15 before he learned to walk. May was a determined, stubborn lady, but she often wondered what the future was for this boy. When Leslie was 16, May and her husband woke up one night to hear music down in their living room. One of them went down to check and see if it was the radio. They found Leslie seated at the piano playing Tchaikovsky's Piano Concerto No. 1, which he had recently heard on television. This was the first that he had ever touched the keys of piano. His adopted mother encouraged his talent for the piano, and by 1980, Leslie was regularly giving concerts in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. He later went on to tour the United States, Scandinavia, and Japan. Tony DeBlois prematurely entered the world in 1974 and barely tipped the scales, weighing in at only 1 pound. He was barely breathing, so the doctors immediately put an oxygen mask on him. What they didn't know at the time was that too much oxygen can make a person blind at that stage. In the same way as Derek Parravicini, Tony became blind shortly after birth. On top of the blindness and slow physical growth, Tony also has severe autism. But at the age of 2, he sat at a piano and began picking out a tune. From that moment, Tony progressively snowballed into the world of music. Though he still struggles with his autism and is still blind, he has learned to play over 20 musical instruments, including the guitar, harmonica, trumpet, ukulele, harpsichord, mandolin, saxophone, and violin. It's hard to pinpoint an exact figure, but it's estimated that Tony has around 8,000 musical pieces memorized, all learned by ear, since he has obviously never read music. Let's look briefly at one example of another class of savants that needs nothing but a dozen sharp pencils to demonstrate their remarkable ability. Stephen Wiltshire can look at a subject once and then draw an accurate and detailed picture of it. He frequently draws entire cities from memory based on one brief helicopter ride. For example, he produced a detailed drawing of 4 square miles of London after a single helicopter ride over the city. His 19-foot-long drawing of New York City demonstrates his memory of 305 square miles of high-rise, which he committed to memory during a 20-minute helicopter ride. In 2005, Stephen produced a panoramic memory drawing of Tokyo on a 23.8-foot-long canvas. Since then, he has drawn Rome, Hong Kong, Frankfurt, Madrid, Dubai, Jerusalem, and London on giant canvases. When Stephen took the helicopter ride over Rome, he drew it in such detail that one can count the exact number of columns in the Pantheon. A 2011 project in New York City involved Stephen's creation of a 76-meter-long panoramic drawing of New York City, which was displayed on a giant billboard in the JFK International Airport. Stephen was born in London, England, in 1974. He was mute when young, and at age 3, he was diagnosed with autism. At the age of 5, Stephen was sent to Queen's Mill School in London, where he expressed interest in drawing. His early illustrations depicted animals and cars. He is still extremely interested in American cars and is said to have an encyclopedic knowledge of them. He began to communicate through his art. His teachers encouraged his drawing, and with their aid, Wiltshire learned to speak fully at the age of 9. Another class of savants have impressed the world with their ability to learn languages. Christopher Taylor was diagnosed with brain damage at the age of 6 weeks. Although walking and talking were somewhat delayed, at about age 3, he developed an avid interest in factual books, telephone directories, dictionaries, and books about flags or foreign countries. Along with the ability to read not only in the usual fashion, but upside down or sideways as well. Around age 6, Christopher showed an interest in technical papers written in foreign languages that his sister brought home, fueling an obsession with languages that has lasted for the rest of his life. Over the years, his ability has flourished under the care of at least 3 dedicated language professionals who have described Christopher's language prowess in this way. He first came to our attention because of his remarkable ability to translate from and communicate in any large number of languages. He has some knowledge ranging from fluency to the bare elements of Danish, Dutch, Finnish, German, modern Greek, Hindi, Italian, Norwegian, Polish, Portuguese, Russian, Spanish, Swedish, Turkish, and Welsh. Like most professional linguists, Christopher can also identify languages from their written form without being able to speak or translate them. So he can immediately identify Bengali, Chinese, Czech, Kuruati, Icelandic, and so on when presented with examples of them. When given a postcard with thank you written in 100 languages on it, he identified 29 of them. The most remarkable savants in history have been called mega-savants for the fact that they demonstrate abilities in more than one of the categories mentioned so far. Kim Peek was born in Salt Lake City in 1951, and his parents knew from the moment of his birth that he was different. His head was 30% larger than normal, creating the problem that his neck muscles couldn't even support it. He was sluggish, cried a lot, and didn't like to play with other children, and for the most part was completely unresponsive. His eyes moved independently from each other. Over time, a baseball-sized blister grew on the back of his head. At age 3, it retracted into his brain, dividing the right half of Kim's cerebellum into 8 or 9 pieces. Because of this injury, He would always have problems with everyday tasks that included motor skills, anything from brushing his teeth, combing his hair, dressing himself, and so on. At 9 months old, a doctor was late to his golf game and took 5 minutes to analyze Kim. He told his parents to drop him off at a mental institution and get on with their lives. Thank God that his parents rejected the idea and chose to care for him. They read to him a lot. At age 18 months, they began to notice signs suggesting that he was memorizing every book that they were reading to him. After learning to read, he developed the ability to absorb books in a way that we can hardly imagine. The fact that his eyes didn't focus together proved to be a blessing in disguise. He would read the left page of a book with his left eye and the right page with his right eye simultaneously. After scanning the two pages for less than 7 seconds, he flips the page. The information on those two pages are now committed to memory, and he will be able to recite every word for the rest of his life with 97% accuracy. If you could read books like this, how many would you read in a day? Well, Kim reads between 4 and 6. As an added bonus, he can read and memorize in this way, regardless if the writing is upside down, sideways, or even mirror image. Kim has read about almost everything from phone directories, atlases, biographies, world and American history, sports, geography, church history, the Bible, 97% by memory, literature, classical music, space programs, actors and actresses, and Shakespeare. In his lifetime, he has read and equally memorized the contents of over 12,000 books. His parents learned that he could quote whole paragraphs of any of these books at the mention of a page number. With such an accumulated knowledge, Kim has surprised people after learning only the name of their hometown, whether it be in the United States or Canada. Kim will go on to name the roads and highways leading to and from the town, the area codes, the zip codes, the town's main business firms and shopping outlets, historical events that occurred in or near the city, the television stations, the main telephone company that serves the city, and the telephone area codes in that area. Besides having an incredible memory, Kim is also able to do calendar calculations and compute large addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division problems mentally. At age 18, he got a job computing payroll for 160 employees. This took him only a few hours since he had no need of a calculator. 10 years later, the business turned to computerized payroll, and two full-time accountants and a computer replaced Kim. Kim also has perfect pitch, allowing him to tell the pitch of any song he has ever heard. If he listens to an orchestra, he can easily detect if a player, even one, plays a wrong note, which actually happened on one occasion. When Kim suddenly stood up and yelled, "What's wrong with that guy?" Kim's father decided not to take him to any more musical performances. Because of his massive musical memory, when he hears a song he has never heard, written by a famous composer, he is able to accurately guess who composed the piece. Kim and his father, Fran, traveled the country for over 20 years, putting on over 3 million air miles and speaking to over 60 million people who have been anxious to test Kim's amazing memory and computational abilities. Daniel Tammet is an autistic savant. As a child, he had severe brain seizures and at one point almost died. His mother says that for the first year of his life, he cried almost continuously. While the majority of savants can't tell us exactly how they do what they do, Daniel can describe to some degree how his mind works, making him one of the most important savants in history. Daniel says that in his mind, each number up to 10,000 has its own unique shape, color, texture, and feel. I must ask a question here. What, in your mind, is the color of the number 7? Anybody? Purple? What about 10? Blue? Okay, thank you. He has described his visual image of 289 as particularly ugly, 333 as particularly attractive, and pi, though not an integer, as beautiful. The number 6 apparently has no distinct image, but can be best described as almost nothingness, opposite to the number 9, which he calls large, towering, and quite intimidating. He also describes the number 117 as a handsome number. It's tall, it's a lanky number, and a little bit wobbly. Similar things to what Daniel describes are part of many people's lives, which is called synesthesia, a mixing of the senses where colors, weights, personalities, temperatures, tastes, textures, or possibly emotions are intuitively associated with letters, numbers, words, or in some cases, musical notes. Daniel's synesthesia also gives him a special gift with numbers. The shapes and colors that he associates with numbers are apparently not as arbitrary as one might assume. For example, his ability to do mental math is closely linked to his synesthesia. When he wants to multiply two numbers, such as the number 53 and 131, he sees the special shapes that these numbers create in his mind, and the answer is the number whose shape best fits between them. On March 14, 2004, which is Pi Day, Daniel set the European record for reciting Pi from memory to 22,514 digits. It was an exhausting task and took him over 5 hours. His method of memorizing and reciting the numbers was a completely synesthetic experience. As he recited each digit, he was simply converting back into numbers the landscape of shapes and patterns that his mind had arranged as he had memorized them. Daniel is also a polyglot, and which is a gift attributed in part to his synesthesia. He ranges from near fluent to fluent in 10 languages: English, Finnish, French, German, Lithuanian, Esperanto, Spanish, Romanian, Icelandic, and Welsh. Savant syndrome is still a mystery to modern science, and I believe that part of the reason is that they look at everything from the perspective of the evolutionary model. But before we look at the light that Scripture sheds on this subject, let's look at one more class of savants that will help us to understand something very important about human abilities in general. Not all present-day savants were born with special abilities. Some of them were given their skills later in life. You might imagine that they developed them over time, but the truth is that they were given their skills instantaneously as the result of some kind of brain trauma. These people are known as acquired savants. Orlando Cerro did not possess any special skills until he was struck by a baseball on the left side of his head on August 17, 1979, when he was 10 years old. Orlando was knocked to the ground, but he eventually got up and continued playing baseball. He decided not to tell his parents about the incident, and therefore he did not get any medical treatment. For a long while after that, he suffered from a headache. Eventually, his headache ended, but Orlando soon noticed that since the accident, he had the ability to do calendar calculations. Besides that, his memory began to record with near perfection the events of the rest of his life. Give him any day since the accident, and he can immediately recall what all happened on that particular day, including the weather. Several critics have tested him on this score and have found his reports to be accurate. Orlando has often expressed his amazement at what he can remember by saying, "That's just too much to fit into one brain." Jason Paget, at age 30, was brutally mugged and repeatedly kicked in the head after spending some time with friends at a bar. Jason woke up the next day to find his visual world overlaid with complex mathematical patterns. Instead of seeing motion, like a smooth video, as we all do, he saw every movement as still frame pictures. The patterns that overlaid the pictures were everywhere he looked, and he began to draw the things that he saw. These drawings took the form of vastly intricate fractal shapes and geometric patterns. When neurologists scanned his brain, they found something incredible. Because part of his brain had been damaged, the brain was using other rarely used sections to compensate for the damaged part. The newly activated areas of his mind turned him into a mathematical genius, literally overnight. Tony Sikora, age 42, was struck by lightning near Albany, New York, while standing next to a telephone booth. He had just hung up the phone and was about a foot away when a rogue bolt of lightning struck. He recalled seeing his own body on the ground surrounded by a bluish-white light. Tony's heart apparently stopped, but he was resuscitated by a woman, coincidentally an intensive care unit nurse, who was waiting to use the telephone. He suffered burns to his face and left foot, where the electrical charge had entered and exited his body. Several weeks after the accident, Tony consulted a neurologist because he was having difficulty with his memory and was feeling sluggish. The neurological exam, including an EEG and MRI, found nothing unusual. After a few weeks, his energy returned and he went back to work. 2 weeks later, his memory problems disappeared. His life had apparently returned to normal, except for the fact that he had now an overwhelming desire to listen to piano music. He bought a piano and decided to teach himself to play. His head was flooded with music that seemed to come from nowhere. Before his accident, he also had no particular interest in music, but within 3 months of being struck by lightning, he was spending nearly all his time playing and composing. Derek Amato miscalculated to dive into a swimming pool while trying to catch a football. He landed in the shallow side and hit the left side of his forehead, although most of the damage was done to the back of his brain. After recovering from the accident, he went to a friend's home where he spied a keyboard. He didn't know how to play, but he felt the urge to go over and play a few notes. Within the next few minutes, he ended up playing beautiful, complex music with an ease that surprised even himself. He says that since his recovery from the accident, his mind's eye sees a flow of black and white squares that constantly float through the air in front of him from left to right. The squares have a musical equivalent, and when he sits down at the piano, that's what he tries to play. Each square sometimes represents one note, other times several notes. He can't play all of them, since when what he hears in his mind is too complex for one musician to play on one instrument, but he does his best. He often has terrible migraines, but he says that he wouldn't trade them for the gift that he has been given. Alonzo Clemens, from Boulder, Colorado, suffered a severe brain injury as a child that left him with a developmental disability, an IQ in the 40 to 50 range. But since that time, he has been able to create very accurate animal sculptures out of clay. Alonzo can create a sculpture of almost any animal, even if he has only seen a glimpse of it. He is most well known for his life renderings of animals, but most of his work are smaller and accomplished in less than an hour. His works have sold for as much as $45,000. Alonzo began sculpturing at school, where he would sit quietly in the back of the classroom, molding bits of clay into tiny animals. When his teachers took the clay away from him, he began scraping bits of pliable tar off the pavement around his school and working on the sculptures in his room at night. Alonzo is now considered a world-class sculptor. He creates incredibly realistic sculptures of animals, mostly horses, antelope, and bulls, after seeing an image of one for only a few seconds. According to his mother, he can see an animal on television and then complete a sculpture of that animal in half an hour. Even though he is unable to tie his own shoes or even eat on his own, his mind somehow grasps the shapes and forms that he sees, and his hands are skilled in reproducing those images. When asked how he does it, Alonzo will often explain in his simple language, "God in heaven gives the gift." I have a question that I'd like us to consider. Where do these incredible abilities come from? As we saw before, modern science cannot explain these abilities from an evolutionary perspective. Can a biblical perspective answer this question? Consider the fact that the first man, Adam, was created a perfect being. A perfect being. I wonder sometimes if we will ever understand just how amazing he was in comparison to how degenerated we are. I personally have come to believe that there are no mental abilities present in man today that men in the civilizations before the flood did not possess. What happened to these incredible abilities? They have been lost over the years as the effects of sin have continued to do their work. The potential is still there, but the cerebral connections necessary to make them possible are no longer formed in most people. As a takeaway, I'd like you to think of your students. They all have different learning styles and abilities. I imagine that many of you have students that you find it hard to connect with. How do you view these students? Do you see potential in them? Perhaps they have dyslexia or Asperger's syndrome. If you don't know much about these conditions, do some research. They are in virtually every school. Like savants, the way that their mind works can be a bit of a mystery, but I believe that we need to see the potential in everyone, regardless of their performance at school. Part of my reason for sharing these conditions is that I have many of the symptoms for Asperger's, and I know what it's like to struggle in school. I had special ed tutoring for 3 years, and to this day, I still struggle to learn in the way that many others do. So while we may not have savants in our classroom, my encouragement is to see the potential in every student, to see that every one of them is unique and gifted in their own way.